Ladies and gentlemen, today I have the honor and privilege of interviewing the only female to have two of the top three highest grossing original music... Wait a minute, guys. I said that wrong. The only person to have two of the top three highest grossing original musical comedies ever. Guys, that's right. I'm interviewing Kay Cannon, a hero of mine, and I can't wait, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yes. Listeners and viewers, you know that this is the Bella Barden version, the Barden Bella's version of Party in the USA from Pitch Perfect, which Kay Cannon wrote.
Aww.
She's here in studio. Here we go. Wait for it. Okay. Kay, we're so excited to have you. Thank you for being here today.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I'm so happy to be here.
Good, it's going to be the best. This is a good zone for me as an interviewer, and it's a good place for you to be. So excited to be. She's not alone, though. I'm surrounded by two of my closest friends and amazing interviewers, Roxy Stryer. Say hi.
I will say hi. Hello, hello.
And Miss Ashley Grace Daniels.
Hello, hello.
Okay, guys, so I am very excited to be here today.
No way.
I know. If you couldn't tell.
I didn't sense that.
I mentioned this was a good zone for me as an interviewer. I will say, 30 Rock is probably my favorite show of all time. I was the musical director of my a cappella group in college, so there's just a lot of good reasons for me to be here with you today. But we have a lot to talk about. Of course, the reason you're here is because you just directed Blockers, huge NBC studio comedy from this year that all of us really loved. You guys have seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Hilarious.
We saw it together. We were cracking up.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That is true.
Yes, you took me. Thank you.
I did. We went to a press screening of it, and you know when the press are laughing that it's actually a funny movie because they don't want to laugh at anything.
That is true.
So
that
everybody was like cackling. I was like, wow.
Yeah. I would get reports after press screenings of how it went, and I would get a lot of that they were laughing really hard, and I'm like, okay, good.
That means that you're solid.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're here to talk about today. Just so you guys know, Blockers is actually coming out for your own on-demand consumption. It's coming out digitally on June 19th and on Blu-ray on July 3rd. Yeah. So right before July 4th. Yeah. I would say that's perfect family viewing.
Just a weekend of fireworks.
Yes, absolutely. So make sure you guys get that. I can't tell you enough how wonderful of a movie this is.
Aw, thank you.
We have a lot of reasons to talk about why it's so great. I think it's a very kind of special and unique version of what's a traditional studio comedy. And there's a lot of reasons that I think both the writing and your directorial hand make the movie what it is. So I say we go ahead and talk about it right now. One of the things I was most interested in with Blockers, Kay, was that you were directing material you didn't write. And so I'm interested in why that choice and why directing in general.
Well, I was like really feeling like I was ready to direct, but I'll be perfectly honest, I was like afraid to do it because I never went to school for it. And I really kind of honor education and this idea that you need to like have a degree in the thing that you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like writing felt organic because I was, you know, a theater English major. Like I felt like that all made sense. And so Nathan Kahane at Good Universe, now at Lionsgate, we went out to lunch one day and he was like, aren't you tired of other people directing your own material? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I am tired. Like having really thought about it. And he was like, you know, like, you really sort of like, and my agents too, they were like, you should direct. And I've been on sets for years and I, you know, I'm an actor, a producer. And when you're a writer on television, I was a showrunner of a show called Girl Boss. It's like, you're the director of the directors. Like I was ready. Mm-hmm. And then Point Grey, which is Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's company, and Good Universe, they sent me what used to be called The Pact. They sent me the script with a straight offer to direct. So when I read it and I related to the themes of the movie, I just felt like it was just serendipitous. I just felt like so fortunate that like this thing that I didn't write spoke to me, and I knew I had a take on it, and I knew what I would do to it, and I, you know, I knew how I would rewrite it, and I knew how the kind of story that I wanted to tell, which is why it all happened that way.
A straight offer for a first-time director is really unique. Why do you feel like they had the confidence in you to direct this? Was it this specific script? They feel like your voice was just right for it? Or were they just like, yeah, this girl's got it. Any script she could direct.
I think it's a combination of those things, but I didn't know it at the time. I actually didn't even know it till after the movie came out, and I heard an interview with Seth and Evan where they talked about when they did Neighbors 2, they had a writer's roundtable just full of women that they invited, because it's about, Neighbors 2 is about sorority rising, and it's about sorority gals. And there was a bunch of dudes who were writing that script, and they were like, oh, we should bring in women who might actually know about this.
Take notes, guys. That does not happen enough in this town. Yeah. So I love that they did that.
Yeah, so I showed up, and anytime I take a job, I am super prepared, and you know, like, just coming from television and, you know, coming from 30 Rock, like, it was such an education. And so I came in, and I just gave my thoughts and my opinions, and I, you know, really laid it out there. And then I guess I didn't know this, but I guess when I left the room, they were like, she should direct something for mm-hmm. us. Like, I'd proven myself in that. Like, it was an audition I didn't even know I was having.
Mm-hmm. So the thing I love about Blockers, and I think it seems consistent with all of your work, is that obviously it's a comedy first, it's hilarious, it's joke-driven, but there is this very tangible heart, and like mm-hmm. I think a huge commitment to, yeah, just a heart beneath all the jokes that are happening. Is that an important part of you as an artist, do you feel?
It is, yeah. It's like, it's always so weird to like be like, an artist when you're a comedy person.
Yeah. An artiste.
An artiste.
Yeah. Get used to
if
it,
if I have
girl.
Any kind of philosophy, you guys. It's, because I think that there's so much out there that people can watch that if you're not moving people, you know, then what are we doing it for, mm-hmm. in a way? And I think we laugh and cry on the same day. And I feel like, I guess that's who I am, too. It's not that I sit around laughing and crying all the time, you guys, but it's like, but I'm fine.
No, really, guys. She's fine.
She's fine.
No, but I do think that happens. To the basic human condition is that we might, something at work you guys might, you know, be cackling over, and then you go home and have a very intense conversation with your husband or something, like, you know, right. You know, like where there's a lot of emotion. So I do try to put that in everything that I do, mm-hmm. and try to get people to feel something.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm wondering on set how that kind of manifested, because you're alternating between scenes where it's in the trailer, so I'm not giving away,
no,
but
totally, yeah.
John Cena is butt chugging, yeah, and then you're going to a scene where three teenage
very emotional
girls,
very emotional,
yeah, that's
butt
the
chugging.
Serious scene.
I would be emotional if I was butt
it's
chugging
true, yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
I'd be crying, yeah, yeah. But then we go to a scene where three teenage girls are coming into their own and learning who they mm-hmm. are, and how do you like navigate that as a director? It's not easy.
It was a little tricky, and you find that balance, and you know, like, you test the movie after, you know, you basically, you shoot everything, and then you come into post, and when you're editing the movie, and you're like, okay, what do I have? Like, what is the story there that I'm really trying to tell? Mm-hmm. And you know, I think you just find that balance, and you trim things, and you cut things, and you just want to make sure that you got as much as you know
need.
Could get from it, and yeah, and so, and then when you test it in front of an audience, you go like, I wanted them laughing, like, and I feel we were successful with this. Like, I wanted a laugh per like 20 seconds, you know, like, and certainly like the producers and the other filmmakers, like, they wanted that too. And then I think they were surprised by, and I was a little too, by how emotional it got. Where the one father played by Ike Barinholtz is having a really emotional scene with his daughter. And I cry like every time mm-hmm. I watch it, and I've seen it a gazillion times. I was there, you know, I shot it. But I think because we started in such a grounded place, in such a real place, that like people really felt it, and you could kind of go off and be crazy because you started in a grounded place.
Well, that grounded part that you're speaking of is a question that especially us women growing up, we all had to face, which is when and how should I lose my virginity? It's a very universal question. And I'm curious because I know that you have a kid. Is that something that when you're making this film, are you thinking, all right, I can relate as a mom, so I know exactly like how I'm going to raise my kid when this question comes up? Or is it more, I remember going through this and what my family told me?
Well, initially it was definitely like when I read the script, my daughter was 2. She's now 4.5.
So you're not quite thinking about it.
But I was in a way, because I think it's like your parenting philosophy starts at the beginning. Like how you are as a parent probably doesn't change that much as they get older. And who I am with my daughter is I'm very much like, you know, tell me everything. I'm here for you. Like, I'm sure I'll create some boundaries, but I want her to be able to tell me whatever she wants. And then I thought about what how it was for me, and I grew up in a pretty strict Catholic home. My mother's amazing, real goofball, but like we never talked about sex. We never, it was abstinence and that was it. End of conversation.
I'm from the Midwest, so
you understand. Really,
yes. Right? And I'm Catholic. I can also understand.
Right? Well, I grew up Jewish and everybody has sex at a very young age. So I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum there.
Yep.
And now we've all talked about our
sex.
Well,
by the way, Catholics have sex at a very young age.
Very
too.
Young, actually, yep, and they do very weird things. It's for another conversation.
For
yeah. I went to an all girls Catholic school. Many stories.
There's
yeah.
a movie there, I think.
There actually we it, should but, talk after
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah.
So they told you just no.
You know, it was
up.
Just known, you know, like anything I learned, I'm the fifth of seven kids. I learned from my siblings, but they also didn't know anything either. And I had, you know, three older brothers who weren't going to talk to me about it. So I just learned from my friends, and I didn't want it to be that way for my daughter. I don't want it to be that way for my daughter. And I do think time goes really fast, and it'll be like a blink of an eye, and then I'll be dealing with this kind of stuff. But I've been saying, like, I want her to, like, be able to talk to me. But in my mind, all the stories are, like, really pleasant. You know, they're like, Mom, I have a crush on this boy, whatever,
yeah.
or girl, or whatever she wants, you know. But then I don't know how I'll be if it's something, like, tragic. or I deem tragic.
Is there any case scenario in which your version of the birds and the bees conversation is sitting your daughter down to watch this movie and you're like, and now the doors are open for questions, comments, concerns?
That's a great question.
That's a really good question. I wonder if I could do, like, she would never want to do this, but, like, you know, start her with, like, Pitch Perfect, where it's like, yeah. like, this is fun, and this is time to be with your girlfriends and have a good time.
Yes.
And then, like, when she's old enough, be like, okay, now watch Blockers. Yeah. I think she can learn. She can learn from movies I do.
Well, one of the things I love that you've talked about in other interviews is how, as a once teenager, you can totally identify with their journey.
Yeah.
But as a now mom, you can totally identify with the women, the moms in the movie, too.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
For those of you listening, first of all, that's a good reason for you to see the movie. I think moms, dads, you will really deeply relate to this. And as a younger version of the demo that's seeing your movie,
yeah.
I related to both as well, and I'd love to hear you kind of speak on that.
Well, you know what's interesting is, you know, because like in the trailer you see that it's a rated R comedy and you see the butt chugging, and I think maybe there's like a lot of women who might dismiss this movie as not for them, when in fact women love this movie, and this is like when we did the testing, it was like 97% of women like over the age of 25 were like, this movie is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they find it, and I'm excited for it to come out you know, digitally, so that they can do that. And I think, you know, in the movie we have every single perspective. We have two moms of the daughters in question, who one is like, this is double standard, why are you doing this? And the other one's like, I'll worry about society tomorrow, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm just worried about my daughter. And like, I think there's just something for everybody. There's a way in this movie for every person. Mm-hmm. Regardless of age or gender.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just to remind you guys, that's June 19th digital, July 3rd Blu-ray. Make sure you pick up the movie. Did you
yeah.
have something, Rox?
Well, I just think it's interesting how non-judgmental I felt this direction was on these characters. And you just described two completely opposing opinions of moms. Was there ever a moment you caught yourself on set judging one of the characters? Or did you just look at them like, okay, I understand your point of view?
Yeah, no, it was that. It was I understood the point of view. Like, that scene that I was talking about in particular, I was, like, really... I really wanted that scene to be in the movie. There was talk of it not being in the movie. You know, like, there was a rewrite of the scene at some point, and I just really held strong on that because I just feel like everybody has, for all for, like, these really altruistic reasons, you know, have their point of view for a specific reason, to protect and love their daughters, even if the ideas are antiquated, or in my mind, are antiquated. So because, you know, the world is dangerous, and you get why, you know, a father would want to protect their daughter. And at the same time, as a woman who is someone's daughter, I was, you know, bummed that there was a double standard, or mm-hmm. that, you know, like, I had a curfew, my brother didn't, you know, like, that kind of stuff. So I just feel like everybody's thoughts on this are valid, and I didn't really feel like there's even room to judge, and may have even had those opinions of my own at some point. Like,
well, yeah, I think parenting is one sphere where it's really, you know what, like, it's one of the most complicated and nuanced things that anyone will ever encounter
yeah.
in their life, I'm sure.
Because if there's like a, let's say there's like a, you know, a teenage girl who's like, shall we say, loose,
Mm-hmm. In a good way.
In a good way.
That's what we always add after, by the way. In a good way.
Yeah. It's like under anything, the sheets. Yeah. Like you say in a good way. Yeah. Let's say something, you know, were to happen to her that is bad. The parents would feel responsible.
Yeah.
Responsibility to that.
Right.
And then if you're too strict and something happens because you're too strict, the parents will feel a responsibility to that.
Right.
So it's like you just do the best you can.
Yeah, and that's what your movie gets at so well. So again, I can't stress enough for anyone watching, whether you're old or young, male or female, you've directed the rare studio comedy that I think is for everyone. So I would really recommend you guys pick up this movie. One more time, guys, that's digital on the 19th and Blu-ray on July 3rd, just in time for the holiday. So check that out.
Yeah, with fireworks.
With fireworks.
I know you mentioned this during the other interview that you did with Maria Menounos on her SiriusXM show, which you can get on demand. But I'm going to ask you again because it was a great answer. You had really captured the way, not only, I don't know if they're millennials, what's the next generation,
Gen Z.
Dan? Gen Z. You really captured that Gen Z essence with the texting and the way they speak to each other. And you had mentioned that you got some advice from your niece, I believe, or from your family member?
Yeah, I talked to my niece at the time. She was 15, and I was just like, you know, like, it was like, what are the kids saying? What are the kids doing? Conversation. Right. And she has a very open, dialogue with her parents, with my brother and sister-in-law. And so she was just saying, like, she was just telling everything to me about what's going on in high school and, like, what she's going through and, you know, all the different kind of secret accounts on Instagram and the whole thing. And I was just, like, wide-eyed and like, oh, my goodness, what's happening? I'm so glad I wasn't in high school when this is happening. What now?
Right.
Like just trying to make sure that it was like as true as possible. And now I think a year from now or 2 years from now, hopefully it'll age well, but you'll look back at blockers and be like, remember when we had emojis? Like when we're going to be going like this and doing stuff with our eyeballs.
Yeah. Did your niece see the movie?
Yeah. She came out with my brother and the whole family came out on opening weekend, and we went theater hopping on that first Friday. And it was so great because I wanted to make people laugh with this movie, and I think I
mission accomplished.
That.
Yes.
And I also want to bridge this communication gap because I feel like, you know, in our attempt to become real equals in our society, us ladies, it's just like we have to start to be treated as though we're not damsels in distress and that we have power and a voice. And so I would love to bridge that communication gap really between daughters and their dads in a lot of ways. And when we were theater hopping, my niece was like, Dad, I think there is a double standard. They start having this conversation. And her brother, Jack, who's only a year younger than her, was like, no, there isn't. And my brother was like, no, there isn't. And then she had to really find her voice. And she's like, there is. You do this. And then they started talking about, she said, like, well, what will happen when I decide to lose my virginity? I mean, I'm in the car. I'm like, what? Oh my gosh. Like, this is, but it was so awesome because they were actually having a conversation about like a real conversation about it that I love so much. And I was like, this is what I hope is happening.
Well, secretly, he was probably happy because he was like, I mean, she hasn't lost it yet.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
I can have this conversation.
I think he knew.
Oh, that's so funny.
My gosh. And he's, my sister-in-law, Michelle, they're like a wonderful couple. They've been married. They were high school sweethearts. So there's that whole other element too, where it's like, he's like, well, you know, I'm married to your mom. And we like kind of like his only girlfriend he's ever had.
Well, I just think the way the movie can balance those themes with comedy and still be a light movie, it's to me one of the movies of the year, and I loved it.
You.
And I can't wait for you guys to see it as well if you haven't. One more time, guys, June 19th and July 3rd. Digital and Blu-ray. Okay, so as a comedy nerd, one of the things I love to ask comedians is, what do you feel like when you were young were some of the like major touchstones for the formation of your kind of comic voice? Like, a lot of people say SNL, a lot of people will reference a sitcom. Do you have anything you can point to?
Definitely SNL was huge.
Who was your cast, do you feel?
Dana Carvey. Mm. But then also Sherry O'Terry.
Yeah.
The Sherry O'Terry, Molly Shannon, Maya, and who am I forgetting? She plays Martha Stewart.
Oh, right. Anna Gasteyer.
Anna Gasteyer, thank you. Yeah, like that. And then like Tina and Amy, you know, like that sort of power when the ladies really became powerful on that show, I think, like when Tina became a head writer and stuff like that, But as in my youth, I would say, like, certainly the Dana Carvey era, I just thought he was the funniest person. And I actually got to meet him at an SNL after party, you know, like years ago or whatever. And I pretty much lost my mind.
I can't relate to that at all, but whatever. Yeah.
And this is going to sound really weird because I'm a huge John Hughes fan. And so, like, Breakfast Club and, you know, Pretty in Pink. And but Weird Science, like Weird Science, I thought it was so funny.
Underrated.
Like, I was like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
So like Weird Science. And then, of course, like Jim Carrey was like, you know, huge at probably a pretty impressionable time in my life. I had a big 6-foot cardboard cutout of him as the mask in my room for a long time. Yeah. And, you know, like it's... I don't know. Like Steve Martin was influential to me in a lot of ways. Certainly Gilda Radner. But I'll tell you, my parents, like I grew up in a small town and, you know, was raised on television and with pride was raised on television. And my parents would sit us like kids, probably to babysit us, but would put us in front of the television to watch sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And they had really good taste. And I remember my mom saying, like they didn't know about ratings or whatever, but she was just like, this show, Seinfeld, is great. Like, remember that first year of Seinfeld, like, they were, like, was going to be canceled, and they didn't have the ratings, and no one was watching it, whatever. And so she's like, you got to keep watching it. And she was like that with Cheers, too. She was like, this show is great. And so, and I was probably too young to really appreciate how great Cheers was at the time, but, like, we would just watch comedies like as a family every night or whatever. On Thursday nights was the big thing.
Tina talks about you and your childhood in Bossy Pants. She says, your success at the show is a testament to why all parents should make their daughters pursue team sports instead of pageants. Do you agree with that statement? Do you feel like that's an encapsulation? So you were an athlete growing
totally.
Up.
Totally.
Okay, yeah. Nice. Do you feel like that informs your writing and your kind of comic style?
Yeah.
In what ways?
Well, it definitely informs a work ethic because I think, like, I can... you know, write for long periods of time without fatiguing. And, you know, you kind of have that mentality. You got to, you know, get it till it's perfect, till it's right. You just rewrite. So in that way. And then I just was on a lot of teams in which I was like the captain of the team or whatever. And so you learn like leadership skills and you're around a bunch of different personalities. So you're absorbing all of that in terms of comedy. And then when you, like, I'm an improviser, so that's in a weird, and I would equate a cappella in this too. It's like, it's a weird, it's a different kind of weird sport, you know, where like you kind of, there's inherently improv is not competitive, but there'll be like, you know, Herald competitions. Or there's like some competing that goes on in the improv world. So you learn to play. It's about learning to play and yes anding and making the other person look better than you. So I feel like all those things helped. And being in sports, you're just like out of trouble.
That is true.
You stay out of trouble.
And there's statistics on that. But what do you do in 2 years, 3 years, however many years, your daughter comes to you and says, Mom, I don't want to play sports. I want to be a pageant girl.
Yeah, it's going to be a real challenge.
Michelle Wolf just had a quote on her new Netflix show where she says, being a woman is complicated because I want women to feel like they can do whatever they want to do. I just wish that pageants wasn't what they wanted to do.
Totally. I do. I wish that too. Yeah. I just wish it was like, you know, just something else.
Yeah. But Miss USA just did remove the swimsuit component to their show, which I think is...
But a lot of ladies are upset by that.
Right. Yeah.
They're like, I've
too.
Worked really hard to have this physique, and I want to be able to use it. Yeah.
Yeah. Super interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, I would be remiss. One thing I do want to ask you quickly before we move on to 30 Rock is you did Boom Chicago and Amsterdam. Uh-huh. And at least in my head as a comedy nerd, I just like have such a mythic view of like what this is. Like Seth Meyers was there.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your experience in Amsterdam?
Totally.
And I just want to hear about it.
Also, Boom Chicago is celebrating their 25th anniversary.
Awesome.
And so in like a month, I'll be there with everybody. We're all going. So Ike Barinholtz and Jordan Peele and Seth Meyers and the whole, there's plenty of wonderful people who are all coming together.
Are you on a group text about it?
No, not really, no. But
I can just imagine that chain.
All emojis.
But, you know, when I went, I had never flown in a plane by myself. My first flight to Europe was by myself. And I had never lived by myself. So imagine, like you get this apartment in Amsterdam. And so for me, there was a lot of, like, sort of coming of age for me, I guess, when I was there. And then when I was there, I was there with Ike and Jordan and Nicole Parker Becky Drysdale, who's this great writer. And then at the end of my time there, Joe Kelly came in. Mm. He's this great writer. There's just like a really bunch of fun people, but they were just so talented. So you were doing this show where people don't speak English as their first language. So you learned how to be really confident because you were performing all the time in front of people who didn't speak, you know, they did speak English, but they mostly, you know, their native language is Dutch, and then you've got all these tourists and everything like that. And then I was in charge of the corporate shows, so I would go, and I've, like, done shows in caves, in castles, and I did a show in Cyprus where they delivered togas that fit you to your hotel room, and after we did our show and had dinner, we all had to put togas on, and then I was like, I remember being thrown into the water, into the pool at this like 5-star hotel at like 4 a.m. by Russians that were like, throw the American girl in
with your toga on.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Like crazy parties.
Yeah.
And then I'm a total drug loser, and there's like drugs everywhere. You know, like So it was this. I was super green. I was super young, and it was just a great place to learn. And a great place to fail,
yeah,
because you weren't like failing in front of, you know, people in America that might not give you a job in the,
right,
in the future. You could kind of like sort of figure it out and go back with all this confidence.
So, I mean, I'd love to see that movie.
Anytime somebody doesn't laugh at your joke too, you're like, they just didn't understand.
Yeah.
It wasn't me, it was them.
Language barrier. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just said that. It louder. Yeah. What a good louder excuse. Until they laughed. Yeah.
Well, I'm the biggest 30 Rock fan in the world, so I feel like we'd be remiss not to talk about that. I know you guys love the show too.
Yeah,
of course.
It got me through mono in college.
Oh my god!
Like, yeah, and I do feel like when we point comedy
congratulations,
touchstones,
it kept you awake. Every joke.
Oh my gosh! And when we talk about comedy touchstones, like it is one for me. Like when I look at shows that have kind of informed the comedy I love and really respect, like that show is huge for me. And you talked a lot about 30 Rock, but one thing I'd be super curious about is, like, if you look at that writer's room, it was you, obviously, Donald Glover, who created Atlanta, Robert Carlock, who...
And everything else.
And he's having an okay year,
huh?
Robert Carlock, who co-created Kimmy Schmidt, Tracy Wakefield, who created Great News, Jack Burdett, Last Man Standing, Paula Pell, who wrote Sisters. I mean, this room, I would just have to imagine it was just the deepest bench.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear about how the room kind of operated, because 30 Rock... I mean, it's generally regarded as one of the best comedies of all time. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear you speak on just that room specifically.
Well, that first room especially, or, you know, the first year where it was, because also on that list would be John Rigi, who created the show American Woman that's coming out, and as well as a bunch of other shows he wrote on the Larry Sanders Show. And then Matt Hubbard, who has got a show that's coming out on Amazon, who won a couple of Emmys for writing individual episodes of 30 Rock. Like, just amazing. So you've got John, Matt, Jack Burdett, Donald Glover and I were the rookies, Brett Baer and Dave Finkel, who show ran New Girl, were executive producers on New Girl. So it was intense. And then you've got Tina at the head table, and you've got Robert Carlock. And I remember the first couple of weeks... Because I had written some samples and stuff like that, but this was my first job. And I remembered thinking, like, I was just having this constant, like, inner, dialogue where I was just like, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm getting a paycheck. I can't believe, like, you know, I'd go to the bank and I'd like deposit it. And I was like, hope I'm here next week. And then they were just talking about their lives for the first couple of weeks because, you know, like, Tina's life being on SNL, it's like so intertwined with the show 30 Rock.
Right.
So it was really just telling stories, and, you know, I come from sketch and improv, so I could, like, you know, give to those stories. And I remember thinking, like, this is awesome. If you were just sitting around talking about our lives, like, I can do this all day. Like, this is great. And then the writing happened. Like, actual writing. I was like, oh, this is very, very hard. And it was just, like, it was like a grad school for comedy writing, just watching. I learned how to break story, and I learned how to create characters that are interesting and funny and different and just different joke structures, you mm-hmm. know. It was really great.
How did you know when to participate and uh-huh. when you were overstepping? Because I think that's very hard when you're in your first room and you are the person that's newest on the team, when you are the greenest person in there. Yeah. It's hard to know when to speak up and when to stay quiet.
And there was a lot of, like, Harvard writers there, too. So, like, sometimes, like, Donald and I would write down words that we didn't know the definition of, and then we would go back to our office. We shared an office, and it'd be like, well, what does this word mean? And then we would look it up, and we'd just, like, tell each other.
Awesome.
But, you know, but Donald and I were came from improv, so we were used to playing and contributing in that way. Like, we were, like, brought a lot of, like, fun and energy to the room. And then you had, like, sort of cerebral, heady writers who could write comedy like nobody else. And so that mixture was really nice. So to answer your question, it's like you would just... You would try to be quiet, but then when you felt like you could infuse fun or, you know, like, bring, you know, make people feel relaxed or something like that, just be really playful. That was really helpful, because as staff writers, that's your job, is to sort of, like, support those that are actually doing it and learn. Mm-hmm. And I would write things down, and you know, if you'd pitch something and everybody would look down and be like, yeah, and then you were just like, okay, let it go.
Yeah.
It helped from being from such a big family, because I am used to a table full of people talking and knowing when to contribute and when not to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes sense.
A lot of our listeners are industry aspirees, and one mm-hmm. thing you've talked about in interviews is how you viewed yourself as a performer preceding 30 Rock.
Yeah.
You sort of had to do a bit of a mental identity shift to really own yourself as a writer. I personally feel like that's great advice for people who want to enter the industry, is, like, say yes and take jobs that you can. But I'd love to hear you sort of speak on that process and sort of that journey that you made.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just sort of rode the horse in the direction it was going. You mm-hmm. know, like, when 30 Rock happened, I was so desperate for a job. I had tested for Saturday Night Live. I did not get it, obviously. I was feeling really like, oh, my gosh, it's going to happen to me again. I'm a school person. Like, I have a master's in education, you know, like, I'm like, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to being unemployed for this long or whatever. So I just felt like it was okay. I you know, and at 30 Rock, you didn't know if you were going to get picked up mm-hmm. like for a long, like every year it felt like, even like halfway through the season, you'd be like, oh, are we coming back? Are we not coming back? There was a time in that first season where we definitely felt like we were going to get canceled and not get a back nine. So I just, in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm still a performer. This is just something I'm doing temporarily. Hmm. And then I sold Pitch Perfect, and it was like, no, now I'm writing. I still do think of myself as a performer, although no one else does,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that helps me in a way.
Well, writing is performance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, yeah, just in it a helps different... in my writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you want to perform? Is that something we'll see from you?
Or? Yeah, you know, I mean, I still do improv shows. I did it for a long time when I was doing Girl Boss and then directing the movie, but now I'm back to doing improv shows and... I did like an independent movie. I just did a small thing in my husband's show called Alone Together.
Which I love that show. By the way.
I know, it's so funny.
So
right?
funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah, Esther's really brilliant.
Yeah,
she's great.
So I, you know, whenever I can, like, had Girl Boss come back for a second season, I would have written myself into the show.
Okay.
But it didn't, and so it didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's all in here.
Something tells me you're going to get
my
another chance
come true.
To write yourself into something.
Totally.
Sure, yeah. Well, we should move on to Pitch Perfect now, because I know our fans will be dying to hear you speak on this this franchise.
Oh, my goodness.
Pitch Perfect is not a small thing. I mean, like...
Oh, boy, no.
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about John Hughes. It's funny. I think of John Hughes as having written the teen movies for a certain generation. I think Tina wrote really the teen movie kind of our generation, which is mm-hmm. Mean Girls, of course. But
yeah.
I think Gen Z is like... Pitch Perfect, like, it's their teen movie. Like, I kind of view you as their John Hughes in that way. Can you speak on just... This franchise blew up. Like, what was that like?
I couldn't believe it. Like, at the premiere of the first movie, I remember being interviewed and someone bringing up a second, like, what if there's going to be, like, a Pitch Perfect 2? And I was like, you bite your tongue. That's crazy. Because I couldn't even believe that I was there at the premiere of Pitch Perfect. Like, I couldn't even believe that it was, like, coming out. And in my mind, I had just made a comedy with music in it. You know, like, I didn't think of it as, I don't know. I in my head, I had it a different way.
Yeah.
And that it caught on the way it did, or, like, had, you know, I was stealing straight from Bring It On with, like, with in terms of, like, Aka What or Aka Believe It. You know, like, putting Aka in front, like, creating their own language.
Yeah.
Like, I was really just taking it from Bring It On, which awesome. I think is an amazingly funny and
yes.
awesome
so good.
Movie. And so I don't know. Like, I just can't believe what's happened with it in a lot of ways. And when I got the call that there would be a second one, I remember feeling like I was going to throw up, and
in a good way.
I just knew it. No, I don't know. Like, in a way of like, oh, there's so much work involved to, like, I didn't want to ruin it, you know.
Mm.
And so when Pitch Perfect 2 did as well as it did, I just it was such a great feeling. I actually, like, Instagrammed myself, like, dancing in the streets about how happy I was about how well it did that opening weekend.
It's so fun. Yeah. As an a cappella veteran, and still, you know, I still do it. You nailed it.
Were you
it.
Offended by? Okay.
No. That's what I was going to say. I had actually read the Mickey Rapkin book, Pitch Perfect.
You did?
I was like, yeah, one of the
before
small,
the movie.
Before
came
the
out?
Movie, yeah, it was like required reading for our a cappella group.
Your a cappella group
I
had
love that so
required
much.
Reading.
Oh yeah.
What was the name?
Just
of your
checking.
Group?
We were originally called the Cheesies. To rebrand, we became Open Fifth because that's much cooler.
Oh, you're Open Fifth. What
yeah.
school?
Miami University in
okay.
Oxford, Ohio. So,
okay.
yeah.
So,
which
so
is
not
confusing.
University, but yeah.
Yeah, and then there's multiple.
No,
whatever.
I get it.
Yeah.
I think we use that as a joke at Second City.
Yeah, yeah I'm sure you did.
There's a sketch about that, yeah.
Well, it's a great school, guys. It's awesome. We're real. But you nailed it, and which... I again, like, when you're writing a community, you do have a responsibility mm-hmm. to get that community right, and, like, just the tone and, like, the unserious self-seriousness.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
like,
right.
Can you talk about, like, how did you get that so right?
Well, because, again, this goes back to, like, it's very similar to the improv community,
mm-hmm.
because we will do shows for free, and then you have a coach, and then the coach gives you notes after your show that you've just did for free. And it's intense. It's
yeah.
like you're really trying to learn how to do this. And a lot of, you know, a lot of improvisers that do the big schools like Second City or Groundlings or whatever, they become famous. Like there's like, there feels like there's all these stakes, but you take it so serious. And people date each other and people marry each other within the community. And the community is like this really tight knit group of like hundreds of people.
Yes.
And so I took it from that. And then I went to, Mickey Rapkin's book launch, like he had like a book party
mm-hmm.
and a group, oh my gosh, I forgot their names now.
I might
a
know
group
them.
Out of New York.
Okay. What school?
The NY Harmonics maybe or something
yeah, that's
like
right.
that.
Yeah.
They performed and they were performing like you guys are them and mm-hmm. we're listening to them. This is how close they performed.
Wow.
Right. And so there was a girl, like I was sort of watching how they were performing, and there was a girl, like if you were the singer, and she was singing Proud Mary, and she was touching herself like while she was doing it, and I was like, that's a character that mm-hmm. which became Stacy.
Yeah.
And then I talked to them afterwards, and I was like, so I'm, you know, and then of course, like, now Pitch Perfect is what it is, but then it was like so foreign, like, who are you, and
right.
you're writing a movie about what? But they immediately were like, the tone you see in the movie is like the tone that they were, where I was like, okay, do you guys ever have any like battles where you sing back and forth to each other? And then this one girl goes, you mean a riff off?
Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I mean.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I love it.
I love
oh my
it.
God.
Did you ever get in touch with them after the movie came out?
She stole
our line.
Because, you know, Kelly Jackal was in an a cappella group.
She was in my sorority in college.
Oh,
we're
was.
Friends. She's so sweet.
She's
yeah,
amazing. Yeah. What a great voice. Too, and I think
out
she was on
world.
The sing off too.
Yeah,
wasn't she?
Or, she's killing it.
Yeah,
doing
yeah.
Very well.
So I would ask her, and I would ask the like Ben Bram. I would ask
yeah,
him.
Deke
like
Sharon
like,
was there.
Deke, yeah.
I interviewed him. You guys can check that out. Yeah.
And I would ask them about like, you know, give me stories of your group or whatever like that. I did a lot of research,
mm-hmm.
Asking these kind of questions, and then their answers are pretty funny.
Right. Yeah. For sure. I mean, it's such a ridiculous, but self-serious, but earnest and fun-loving community. And I'm so glad that not only the movies became as big as they did, but that you got it right. Because it would have been frustrating as, like, an earnest a cappella lover to see you get it wrong and for the movies to get as big as they did. So your research is appreciated.
Thank you.
Rox, you had some questions that I'd love for you to dive into.
Well, first of all, also, I don't think it would have gotten as big as it did if you hadn't gotten it right. So was there ever a time where you were like, I am risking putting something in here that is not genuine, but I need the laugh, and you decided to put it in there or throw it away?
I can't think of anything, but of course, you know, like Jason Moore, who directed the first one, like really, you know, he captured the tone so great, you know, like, and I don't know, I'm sure there are jokes that are on the cutting room floor that probably for good reason that didn't make it. I think, you know, I didn't really have as much to do with the third one. I wrote the first couple of drafts of it, but then I equate the Pitch Perfect movies as like Pitch Perfect was my baby. Pitch Perfect 2 is like my teenager that was like really hard work and I was really trying to like make sure I got right. And then, like, Pitch 3 is, like, the adult kid who never calls mom. You know? And that's how I felt like Pitch 3 was, like, I had, like, nothing to do with it. I was doing blockers or whatever. Right. And so I don't know, like, if there's anything in there that would feel, you know, not authentic or something. But I think that Jason and the producers and the actors and everybody in the first one just did such a great job of, like, capturing what was on the page. And a lot of times for screenwriters, you don't get, like, you'll write something, especially a studio movie, it'll go, and then it's what you end up watching is nothing that was, like, what was the intention on the page. And I felt
what
like...
What do you do in that scenario?
I mean, you're not the one, you know, you try to direct your own stuff, I guess, is what you would do. Like
cash that check.
And then have another idea. But, like, I really felt like when I saw, the first time I saw Pitch Perfect, I went in to post with Jason had invited me and my husband to watch it. And I think I just didn't, like, breathe for, like, 2 hours. I mean, obviously I was breathing, but I was just, like having, like, this, I was just, like, hanging, like, white-knuckling, watching the whole thing because it's, like, it was so crazy. I was like, oh, I've got a movie I wrote, and this is what it is. And it is what is on the page. Like, it was how I envisioned it. It is how, you know, I thought it would be. And it made me cry at the end. Uh-huh. And, you know, and it's, like, a tribute to Breakfast Club. And I don't know if you noticed, I'm sure you didn't, but in Blockers... in Julie's room, I put up a below, so you can't really see it because I didn't want to be all braggy, but there's a Pitch Perfect poster.
Oh, is there?
Because I felt like she is, like, she would have grown up on Pitch Perfect.
That's her generation.
Also, it was a Universal movie, so it was very easy to put on there and get approval for it. But, yeah. Like,
it's true. I mean, it has become, I think, an iconic franchise, like sort of a touchstone. So I want to congratulate you and just thank you for getting it right.
Thank you. You know what was like the best thing ever, I feel like, is this idea of, like, you know, song music is very uplifting. It makes people feel really good. But I got this video of these kids, like 12-year-old boys in Dublin, getting out of, like, Catholic school, whatever, they're in their uniforms, and they're just singing Cups, like, in the streets of Dublin, like, without a care in the world. You know, that kind of stuff makes me feel really good.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Is that the next step for you? Because you talked about, obviously, wanting to direct the movies, and that more is writing and directing one movie. That is your next goal?
Yeah.
And possibly having a role in it for yourself as well?
I don't know about that, because I feel like I'd have a lot of work to do. But right now I'm writing something that I hope I get to direct. I hope gets made. And
well, you know, some news this morning that might help make that happen, right? K&L. Can we talk about this?
Oh, yeah. Last night. Laverne McKinnon and I, who she's the executive producer on Girl Boss, and you know, when we met each other, both creatively and personally, we just, like, fell in love with each other. And we have a production company called K&L Productions, and we're doing both TV and film, and we're trying to, like, you know, make people laugh and make people cry, and just mentor people and try to, you know, just do a lot of good work as much as we can.
That's awesome. I was gonna say, did you have a mentor growing up?
I think, like, Tina Fey is, you know, been a real mentor to me. And then,
a good
mentor. And then prior to that, like, I swear every single teacher I had growing up was really so great to me. And, you know, like, being from a small town. In fact, my track coach and health teacher is like staying at my house right now.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
And that's how like we've stayed in touch, and I just felt really supported growing up.
Wow. That's great.
With this production company, do you think that you are going to focus on creating your own work and that's where it starts and stops? Or are you
we're creating a slate that has everything, like, you know, stuff that I'm co-creating or writing and then directing and then stuff that I'm just producing and that we're, you know, guiding people. So
what motivated you to want to start a production company? That's a massive undertaking.
No, yeah, it really is.
And I don't mean that to scare you.
No. Maybe I shouldn't.
She's fine.
I just feel like I, you know, like Laverne and I talk about all the time, like, and also Irene Marquette is someone who, she's like right over there, you guys can't see her.
Hey.
But she is also like our third in our triangle of trying to move, touch, and inspire people. It just feels like the next thing to do. Like, we want to be able to, we work hard, and we have pretty big bandwidth, and we're incredibly ambitious, and we just like really want to go for it and create content that we really love and believe in.
Yeah. So we have a huge wrestling contingency at our network.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm sure they'll be interested in just the John Cena of it all.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to hear, you worked with John Cena closely, and Rox, you have a little bit on this too. I know you follow wrestling.
Yeah, well, actually right now filming next door to us for some insider baseball for you guys at home is X-Pac, who is a massive wrestling star. He taped a show here, and so talk about the fans. They're obsessed with John Cena, and they follow him from the wrestling world to things like blockers. Maybe they wouldn't have necessarily seen it. So what was it like with him on set? Could you tell that he had been trained different from other actors because of his wrestling background?
Well, you know, the wrestling background for him, I feel like John is a performer and he understands story, and he actually has a high comedy IQ. And when you're an athlete and you're about to do something like his next, you know, role as Mitchell in Blockers, like he worked really, he treated it like he was an athlete working on this role. Like he did his homework. He was always super prepared. He knew his lines. Anything, as you can tell from the trailer, I asked him to do, he did. and he really like he comes from like sort of this like improv kind of world, because like the wrestling world is a performance, is like it's athlete, you know, athleticism meets the circus, you know, like
okay. Or the circus.
In a way, you know, like where it's like, and you're going to make sure that every person sitting in front watching you is being entertained and is there with you. And I would work with John Cena for, I would do anything. Like, he's so great, and he was just really a pleasure.
That's
and
amazing,
he's so talented.
To hear.
Yeah.
Another thing that, of course, is coming up all over the news right now with John Cena is the Nikki Bella relationship, which was on again, off again, on again right now. Did she ever visit set? Did you ever get a chance to meet her?
I didn't meet her until the premiere of Blockers, because they're both so incredibly busy. You know, I mean, like, she was so incredibly busy. I didn't ask too many questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kept that. Also, John is very much like, he'd call me coach on like coach,
so
get everything you need, coach. You know, like that was that kind
that.
Of stuff.
That seems so him. That's great. Well, we're running out of time, but we do have a game that we'd love to play.
Ooh, okay,
so Ashley's going to take the reins here.
We're good at games, right, Kay? We've got it.
Oh, yeah. Please say this is easier than the last one we did together.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So in this game, we've comprised some quotes, and they are quotes that you have written.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
So we want to know if you can guess if it's a character that you wrote for or if it's a real person.
So some of them you've written, some of them you haven't.
This is so exciting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, some of them you haven't, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, see, we already messed up the game, meaning I did. Okay. All right, so first one. I don't know if she wants to be me or skin me and wear me like last year's Versace. Did Jenna Maroney say this, or did Dina Manzo from The Real Housewives of New Jersey?
Oh. Oh, my goodness. Okay, give it.
Yes.
Give it to me. I don't know if she wants to wear me like... I'm going to say Jenna Maroney said that.
No. Dina Manzo.
One of the housewives.
You wrote a housewife, essentially.
Oh, my gosh.
You're
30
like,
Rock's tough because I don't know if I wrote... Like, the jokes could have been written by anyone.
Okay. Get your head out of your ass. It's not a hat.
Okay, that is one of my characters. That's Aubrey.
Yep, yes. I knew that to say. Yep, exactly.
It sounded kind of Trumpian, so we wondered if that might be something he would say. But
yeah. Aubrey or Trump. Oh, boy.
All right. Tonight's the night we celebrate our bodies and out mind. And I think you meant to say our minds?
I did mean to say our minds.
Okay, so let's start again. Tonight's the night we celebrate our bodies and our minds. Did Tracy Jordan Black Tie say this or Tony Robbins?
Tracy Jordan in Black Tie.
In Black Tie. Or
in the episode called Black Tie?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, wait. What did Tracy do in that episode? Because that was where we had Gerhardt. Thank you for coming to my birthday.
Wow, you have a great memory.
I mean, this is like a long time ago. Yeah. This is like, I'm going to say Tracy said it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. She's talking to Pete Hornberger.
Tony Robbins could say that. Yeah. He probably has at some point. He stole it from Tracy.
The best customer service is if the customer doesn't need to call you or talk to you. It just works. Did Jeff Bezos say this or Jack Donaghy?
No, Jeff Bezos.
Yes, that was Jeff Bezos.
You were so certain about that one. You're like, my Jeff would not say that.
That's even a joke.
All right. I'd really like to start calling you Shorty in public. Robin Thicke or Schmidt?
Schmidt. Yeah. It's bringing back memories of when it was like written.
Last but not least, you are psychotic, Jesus Juggs. Did Angie Jordan say this or Tamara Judge from
Tamara
Real
Judge
Housewives?
Says that.
Yeah.
Nice work. Because I also memorize everything that the Real Housewives say.
Wait, you do? Oh, we have to bring you in for the Real Housewives after shows here.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you a big fan?
Yes,
obsessed, too. Gazillion. Okay.
It's really
What's your
fun.
Favorite?
Everybody.
My favorite is a split between New York and Atlanta.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Mine's
New York.
My favorite is
Dorinda.
Dorinda's
amazing.
Yeah.
Have you ever met any of them?
Yes,
We've had every New York Housewife here. I'm obsessed. Like,
wait, who have you met?
So I met Kyle Richards at an Emmy party years ago.
Did you go up to her?
I met, And I went up to her and I said, how is Taylor doing?
Oh,
because
no.
It was after,
yeah.
And she told me, she was like, she's not doing well.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Good. Thank you for letting me
Any other Housewives encounters?
I did yoga with Lisa Rinna. I did not talk to her. Although in the yoga class, they were like, introduce yourself to the person next to you. And she was too far away. I wanted to be like, hello.
Oh my god.
And then I was at a Lakers game with Vicki Gumbelson and her whole family. And so you have to understand my husband could care less, and he leaves the room if I have it on, and he thinks me a worse person when I watch. and we walk into we had gotten like tickets, like some VIP kind of nonsense that we don't ever get, so don't think that I get that often.
I'm sure that's not true.
But we walk in and it's like the whole family. It's like Vicky, her boyfriend.
No. Boyfriend at the time, was it?
The one now, right?
Oh,
Steve.
The new one, Steve.
Not Brooke.
Okay, I thought you said.
But like, so it's Steve. I see her children first, and I like stop in my tracks. I'm like,
no.
Housewife is here.
You knew it. You're a real diehard.
Also,
wow.
I have to tell you this story. We shot Blockers in Atlanta. And I rented a house, and I'd only seen it, the house, the pictures online or whatever. And I had only been to Atlanta for, like, pre-production, like, in and out or whatever, but I haven't really been to Atlanta proper. And so it's, like, early in the morning, I fly in to move there to shoot the movie, and the sun is, like, barely up. I had my eyes closed, and I open it, and I get to, like, East Atlanta, and I stop, and I'm like, I've been here. I know this neighborhood. And it's because of where Cynthia Bailey used to live.
Are you kidding me? So you thought you were actually like, I've been here. Yeah, you've been there. Like, you've watched
I'm like,
it.
I'm home.
That's
I know
amazing.
All of these. I know all of these houses.
Wait, so awesome. That's amazing. You have to come and do a recap, please.
Yeah, we'll make it happen. You'll have a blast. Ashley knows more about the Housewives than anyone I know. And it's a science. It's like there's
it
this
is a
whole.
Science.
It's,
yeah. It is,
we got to get involved, Jeff. We got to get involved.
I know. I'm like, what am I missing? I need to get on the train. That being said, what is next for you, Kay? Obviously, Blockers, such a wonderful movie, guys. I can't tell you enough how much you need to see this movie, but what else?
So we have a slate for the production company, and then I'm writing a movie for Sony, and I'm just kind of like more of the same, like just trying to
Awesome.
Get stuff done.
Write, produce, direct, yeah, yeah, star in things, you yes know, just the casual Tuesday.
Just trying to keep working.
Well, we cover everything here, so when your new stuff comes out, you know we'll have it here, and we'd love to have you back. If you guys go into our archives, we have coverage of every Girl Boss episode, and we covered Blockers in Anatomy of a Movie, which is on our sister network, yeah, the Popcorn yeah Talk. Yeah. So we love you here, and we cannot thank you enough for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so great. Much. Thank
good
you.
All right, guys, we got to get out of here, but before we do, my name is Jeff. If you guys want to find me online, you can do that at Jeffrey C. Graham. This has been Spotlight On, where we highlight some of Hollywood's biggest above-the-line talent, directors, writers, showrunners, actors. I'm not alone. I'm surrounded by a group of brilliant co-panelists, including Ashley Daniels.
Hello. You can find me on Instagram at Miss Ashley Daniels and Twitter at Ashley Daniels.
I'm everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
And Kay Cannon, where can they find you online if they want to tell you how much they love Blockers?
Go to KK Cannon. K-A-Y-K-A-Y Cannon.
Nice. I love it. All right, guys. This has been Spotlight On. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time here at AfterBuzz TV.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.